Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. If you're listening via our new Radio Plus iPhone app, did you know that our hosts sometimes send charts they're talking about directly to the Radio Plus app? If you don't have the Radio Plus iPhone app yet, you'll want to download it. It's free via the iTunes App Store.
The statistics are out. The revision is more negative, and the statistic this morning is more negative as well. Negative 0.50% month over month. Actually came in at a most difficult negative 0.70%, and that takes year over year down to 3.67%. So, Ken, more challenging statistics than you'd want to see. We'll bring this out. Let's bring in Carl Case, of course, of Case-Shiller, of Wellesley College. Carl, this is difficult news along your bumpy road of housing recovery, isn't it?
A little bit. I mean, it's consistent with what else is going on out there. It's still a rocky road. There's a lot of variety in the markets. There's within metropolitan areas, some places are up and some places are down. There's increasing variety, but I do believe the seeds of a recovery are being planted. Although it's a bit like a sump pump, you know,
yeah.
The water starts climbing up, and then you got this backlog of water that keeps things under wraps.
And here's a break exclusive as we welcome Bloomberg Television and Betty Lou. Ken, break exclusive. Washington was negative month over month. Non-seasonally adjusted, negative 1.07. That's because everybody's down in Florida campaigning.
Well, the numbers have been looking pretty good out of Washington. Carl, is there one bright spot in the report you can find?
Well, you know what's funny is the lag. We're lagged, right? We come in with September, October, November
Fair.
Right now.
Yep.
So it's a three-month moving average. We don't report until we're pretty sure that a trend is real. And so the fact that it's lagged and the fact that the things that generally lead it seem to be all up makes me a little bit more optimistic about what's to come than I was last month and the month before. So even though ours is still down, and it's one of the few negatives that are out there, but it's a considerable lag because we have to wait for the properties to close, we have to collect the data, we have to put it in, and we're pretty careful about doing that accurately and with real sales.
These are challenging, Professor Case. 3-month annualized statistics: Detroit negative 15, Dallas negative 11, Cleveland negative 11, Boston negative 12, New York negative 10.31%. Looking back 90 days and giving an annual feel to it, the trend here is challenging. Fourth quarter GDP was a bit light and nominal. Was terrible. What is the economic backdrop that would lead to a housing recovery?
Well, I mean, you've got housing becoming a lot more affordable. You've got efforts in way to get the backlog of foreclosed property out of the way. You've got sales. If you look at the fundamentals, existing sales are up to 4.6 million. Starts are still holding below 700,000, which is now, it's been the case, it's below 700,000 for 38 straight months. So we're not building any new. We're getting about the business of tearing down some of the old and cleaning up the mess. The household balance sheet is still a mess. I mean, it's very interesting if you look at table B100 in the flow of funds. Tom, you would love that. You should put it by your toilet and read it every day. It's the balance sheet of the household sector. And it shows that
I'm all over that, Carl.
if you look at the assets and liabilities of the household sector, they were down $12 trillion in 2008, and now they're back substantially. But the portion that was made up by home equity is down a lot. It was $12.9 trillion in equity back in 2006. It fell by $5.5 trillion. It's currently down. From 2006 to 2011, it's down $6.7 trillion.
So there's been a wealth reduction here, is what you're saying.
A big one, and with the stock market back, you would think it would begin to catch up, but it's this downward stickiness with people not, you know, it's prices begin to rise, and then a
right.
lot more sales happen.
Well, what's going to happen here, Professor Case, with multifamily? Are we all going to become renters? Ken has pointed out multifamily doing a little bit better than single home. Is that where we're heading in the next 5 years?
No, it's in part where we've already gone. We've taken the home ownership rate down from close to 70 down to 65, and it doesn't look like it's going any higher. The rental vacancy rate's the lowest it's been. As of second quarter, it was the lowest it's been in 6 or 7 years. It came back a little bit. The vacancy rate popped up a little bit, strangely, in the third quarter, and I'm anxious to see what happens in the fourth. But, I mean, the numbers, when you look at them, I look at Boston. The problem is that there's so much going on in the mix of different kinds of property coming online, it's hard to get a handle on these macro numbers. I look at the zip code level indexes for Boston, and I see minus 15, minus 20 in the last year in the western part of the state and the north-south shore. And you come to the western suburbs, and you've got 5 and 10 years up. So it's there's a lot of variation across states. There's a lot of variation. Some of these states are just going to have to clean out the inventory before anything happens. Most of that happens to be in Florida, Arizona, and Nevada. But it's a complicated picture, but it's moving, and everything seems to be moving basically in the right direction in the leading stuff. And we're it's only a matter of time before the prices begin to follow. They're certainly not hemorrhaging like they were 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Well, Carla, as you say, you know, household balance sheets don't look great. But on the other hand, as we've been talking here, home prices are down substantially.
Yep.
Latest from the Mortgage Bankers Association. I never thought I'd see a sentence like this. Mortgage rates went up to 4.11%.
Yeah.
From 4.06. Is part of the problem here that banks are still kind of stingy?
Well, you got two things going on. You've got the Fed trying to keep interest rates down, and they're doing everything in their power to do that, including buying, you know, they bought this all this paper, and they did this the twist to try to get the long rates down. In the meantime, the federal government's trying to unload risk, right? And if it starts selling that risk back onto the market, that risky paper is going to fall in value and rates are going to go up. And people are talking about as much as a 300 basis point increase in rates once the riskier portion of the borrowing population is out there getting mortgages. So it's going to be risk-based priced somehow. We haven't figured out quite how to do that yet. There's some stuff going on with fancy accounting. Chris Mayer and the guys have got a great proposal up for doing refinancing and getting payments down, but the present value of those pieces of paper have to be dealt with sometime. And so you've got this downward pressure from the Fed to keep rates low, and at the same time, reorganizing the mortgage market is going to push rates up as we move to risk-based pricing. There's no way around that.
Carl, I just brought up Case Shiller here, and this is just the home price index quarterly data. As we go flat here at a 130.39, I would suggest an interpretation of this back to the nadir of the summer of 2009. Is it best a flatness? But actually, you could interpret it as a little bit edging down.
Yes.
What does it take to reverse that? Is it public policy, or is it just time?
I think public policy will help because you've got this sump pump effect or this dam effect of holding back the what do you call shadow inventory. As we pick up, that shadow inventory just bunch of people who've been postponing selling come onto the market. So it's like there's this seemingly infinite supply of available property that comes online as soon as prices start to stabilize. It keeps them above the line, or below the line, as it were.
I'm going to send this chart out, Bloomberg Radio Plus, and Ken, it goes back to 2003 on a nominal basis.
Yeah. Which says a lot. You know, I was looking at the housing as an investment. If you bought a house in 2000, you're still way ahead in cities where you wouldn't bet that. You're way ahead in Boston. You're way ahead in Los Angeles. You're way ahead in the cyclical markets. Where you're not ahead are in this market that had this artificial boom bust.
Carl Case with us. Peter Buchvar. Carl, looking at the seasonally adjusted data. I was looking at non-seasonally adjusted before. We're down 33% from the high in 2006.
Right.
Okay, so we bottomed out. I want to repeat this again. What are the conditions to get on a new, say, 3% up a year slope?
Wow. I think you have to look at the places where it's already occurring or beginning to occur and the places that have retained their value. See, if this were like the oil market, if it were like the any other more agricultural markets in particular, we wouldn't be having this debate at all because prices would adjust until supply and demand came back into equilibrium, right? Prices would fall. What makes this market different and why it makes it difficult to answer your question is that prices don't fall. They stick. And if you think about what the market is, it's those people who have liquidity who come into the market with wealth and they trade. You look in California, you look in Boston, New York, there's a lot of baby boomers who got in before the market who still have a lot of equity. And if you look at what we define as the market, it's what trades. And what trades are those properties that someone is willing to pay enough to, and they have the financing or they have the capital gains, unrealized, huge unrealized capital gains yet in the housing stock, in the hands of people who bought before the bust, or substantially before the bust, so they got in on the boom periods. So if you think about that, you've got the demand curve, people sitting way up on the top with high willingness to pay are the ones who are transacting. Everybody else is holding out, waiting for prices to go back up. And nobody knows how long that will take to clear up. There's no answer to it, except you watch the fundamentals, and the fundamentals meaning number of existing sales, number of new sales, the inventory of for sale property, the best guesses you can get on what the shadow inventory is, and you look at to see if they're going in the right direction. And right now, they are. I really believe that they are. And compared to, certainly, the end of the tax credit, they looked good during the tax credit period. Tax credit worked, but it moved everything from the 2 years after it expired to the period when it was enforced.
Well, Carl, would it be fair to call that all those capital gains, and you know, it was like magic there for a few years, it kept going up,
sure,
compounded and tax-deferred, and in some cases it could be completely tax-free, but it's trapped equity, right? You can't...
Well, but if you think about the number of people who have positive equity in their house, I'm an example. I'm a leading edge of the baby boomers. I bought a house for $56,000 in Boston 30 years ago. It went up to $240,000. I rolled that into a house worth $1 million. I don't have a mortgage. There are a lot of me out there. So it's not all people who bought at the peak and saw their property values go down by 30%. It's people who have still realized gains in their house. Their tax liabilities are being reduced by the decline in value, but they've still got a lot of it left. Many of them are beginning to move into retirement years, and the liquidity in the normal market, where you have shoppers, buyers and sellers, where the buyers have some ability to pay, embedded in equities that they gained over the past cycles. Now that's not true in Texas. It's not true in the Midwest by and large, but it's true
right
on the coasts, where half the value is California and the Northeast.
But Carl,
a third of the value in the country is in Florida and California. That's part of the problem.
If I get out my textbook, and of course the only textbook I would use is Case Fair, and if I get out Case Fair, I'm sorry, it's all at the margin, and the good feeling of that entrenched with a net worth owner such as yourself is affected by the marginal movers of the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Which is, I've got to unload this property. They still have a preponderance of effect here, don't they?
Oh, no, but baby boomers go. The leading edge of the baby boomers is 65, so they're not really getting out yet.
Yeah, we don't like to talk about that on this program.
They're 20 years younger than that, so there's still a lot of buyers in that back edge of the baby boom. And what they're doing is they're trading with each other. It's not like the housing is going to all of a sudden disappear, right? So the market has still got a lot. Has still got some life to it. We don't know how. By the way, one of the things that's positive we haven't talked about that sheds light on that question is what's happening to household mm-hmm. formations. I mean, we have this massive movement in with mom and dad. We have millions of people who
yeah.
have formed households in the past. All of a sudden, in the last 2 months, that's turned around. We lost 750,000 households in the 5 months. If you go back to September of 10
yeah.
through July of 11, we lost 750,000. Then in August and September, we added back 518,000 households.
Carl,
in the census numbers.
Yeah, we're going to have to leave it there, Carl. We
oh,
could go
darn.
On all day with. He's getting wound up. We greatly appreciate Carl Case's commitment to Bloomberg Surveillance.
Listen to Bloomberg Surveillance weekday mornings at 7 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York, or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2012.